Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Let's turn now to the big surprise that has shaken up the Democratic gubernatorial primary race. Former Newton Mayor Seti Warren says he's dropping out because he hasn't been able to raise the big money needed to challenge Governor Charlie Baker. Here are the hard facts that Warren considered. The former Newton mayor had a little more than $51,000 in his campaign account. Baker, the highly popular incumbent, has close to $8 million. So Warren told the Boston Globe, the challenge was insurmountable. That leaves just two Democrats in the primary race, Jay Gonzalez, the former Secretary of Administration and Finance under Governor Deval Patrick, and Bob Massey, a former Democratic nominee for Lieutenant Governor. And we're going to speak to both of them in just a few minutes. But first, we turn to WBUR State House reporter Steve Brown, joining us from Beacon Hill. Hi, Steve. Good to have you.
Hi. Hi, Anthony.
And with us here in the studio, Politico Massachusetts reporter Lauren Dzinski. Lauren, always good to see you.
Thank you for having me.
So, Steve, let me start with you. What more can you tell us about why Seti Warren decided to pull out?
Money, plain and simple. Warren's lack of it and Charlie Baker's ton of dough. Now, you'd mentioned that Charlie Baker has close to $8 million in the bank, and that's true. But you didn't mention that Baker's running mate, Lieutenant Governor Karen Polito, also has her own $3.5 million. So they run as a team. Combined, you're looking at well over $11 million for this race. The chairman of the Democratic Party, Gus Bickford, dismisses the money issue, saying that the Democratic candidates will start raising more money once the Dems have their convention in early June. Maybe so, but Baker and Polito will continue to raise more money, and they likely won't have to spend any of it on a primary, whereas Gonzalez and Massey will. The money just puts the governor's office out of reach for any Democrat. Seti Warren knows that, and he got out now.
All right. Well, I want to listen to just a little bit of Seti Warren on the campaign trail earlier this year. He said he was running for governor to tackle what he called the major issue of our time, which he identified as economic inequality. He wanted to hike taxes on the state's richest residents to make investments in things like transportation and education. So here he is speaking at a Democratic caucus in Hull in February. Let's listen to a minute.
We've got to have people who are doing well in this economy contribute more so that we can fully fund K through 12 and add to public education after school enrichment, summer enrichment, early childhood, and free public college lifelong. Those are the kind of investments we need to be making.
So that was Seti Warren speaking in February. He's out of the race now. Lauren, I want to bring you on this. What are your thoughts on Seti Warren's announcement today?
I mean, it's absolutely a surprise. I've been saying that a little bit, but, you know, Seti Warren was making calls to, Democratic state committee members, people who would be supporting him at the state convention. Very recently, he was doing, you know, policy-based, campaign-based tweets from his account. I know that's, you know, kind of anecdotal, but it's an indication that this wasn't exactly a campaign that had been powering down for a long time. And I think it very much took a lot of people by surprise, myself included.
Yeah, Stephen, Warren got into this race pretty early. His top advisors included John Walsh, the former Democratic Party chairman. He had a solid resume, a former mayor, a veteran. How surprised were you by this? I mean, I understand what you said about the money, but how surprised were you?
I was surprised as well. He was in it. I don't think, you know, he probably would say outward, yeah, oh, yeah, I think I can win it. But probably in the back of his mind, he knew the odds were against him and everything. But still, you know, he might want to bring some of these issues to the debate and bring them to Charlie Baker and see if he can get some of them enacted.
Now, Steve, you were at an event with Governor Baker earlier today. What did he have to say about Seti Warren's sudden departure?
Well, he wished Seti Warren well. He said that the decision to get into or out of a race is personal, and that people make them for whatever makes sense for them. The governor plans on just focusing on his job of being governor. I did ask him, though, if he and his hefty campaign war chest are unbeatable.
There's no such thing in politics as a sure thing, and we all know that. And as I said, I'm going to focus on the job because I think what voters want more than anything out of their elected officials is that they spend more time focusing on the work and a little less time focusing on the noise.
This is sort of what he's been doing all along when it comes to the presidential campaign back 2 years ago, whenever we would ask him about, what's going on with the presidential campaign and Donald Trump as a candidate at the time. He would just say, hey, I'm focusing on my day job. I'm just focusing on my day job. And it sounds like he's going to be doing that for the next 6 months.
All right. So, Lauren, this leaves two Democrats in the primary race, Jay Gonzalez and Bob Massey. We're going to hear from them shortly. But in your view, what does this mean for them? What does the race do? What does this departure mean for them?
I mean, this very much kind of clears the field for them. Now this allows both Jay Gonzalez and Bob Massey to kind of run in the respective lanes that they've kind of occupied. Bob Massey is very much kind of seen as the Bernie Sanders in our backyard. You know, he's a very, very progressive candidate and very much kind of aligns with the Bernie Sanders supporters among the Democratic Party. Jay Gonzalez kind of represents a more centrist part of the Democratic Party, you know, and has experience, you know, in Governor Patrick's administration. He has experience in ANF and kind of a more budgety, Democratic Charlie Baker sense. And I think you're really going to kind of see a separation between the two candidates in a way that was harder to see when there were three candidates in the field.
Interesting. So now look, Seti Warren dropped out because he said he couldn't raise the money to compete with Baker's hefty campaign war chest. Won't that be a problem? Steve, I'll come to you on this question. I'll come to you both. I'll start with you, Steve, for Bob Massey and Ray Gonzalez.
Yes, definitely. For Jay Gonzalez, definitely, because people are not kicking in money onto these campaigns right now. They might be actually focusing on some other campaigns. Some Democrats in around might be saying, hey, you know, we're never going to be able to defeat Charlie Baker. Maybe my money might be better spent maybe out of state, putting it into a congressional race that they might see that they have a chance of flipping.
Yeah. And what about you, Lauren? What do you think? I mean, I know that, and we're going to hear this from the candidates, that too much is being made about polling and money. I mean, Charlie Baker seems to have the big advantage there, but is too much made out of that?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard because you don't want to overblow the significance of polling and money. And yet, both represent snapshots and metrics of a race at a given point. And the thing about Seti Warren saying that, you know, he couldn't break through fundraising-wise, it's an issue for everyone in the Democratic primary right now. Jay Gonzalez and Bob Massey are also kind of struggling to bring in the type of fundraising dollars, at least that Governor Baker is and that Seti Warren was struggling with. And all three are dealing with a lack of name recognition among voters come November. So that's the thing that I think is kind of raising some people's eyebrows about Seti Warren's departure, is that his situation wasn't necessarily that different from the two other candidates that remain in the race. Now, how things kind of shake up subsequently and what happens after the fact, you know, very much stands to be seen. And of course, there is still time before, you know, the state convention come June, as well as the primary, you know, the first Tuesday of September, as well as November itself. Obviously, things can always change.
Yeah, I mean, there are two ways to look at this, I think. I mean, it's really interesting. On the one hand, as you said, Lauren, lots and lots of time yet to go, and it's sort of silly for anyone to sort of call this race. On the other hand, Seti Warren stepping out of the race for this reason sort of adds to the narrative that Charlie Baker's got all this money and is super popular and really hard to beat.
Absolutely. Right? And that was the other thing that kind of surprised me about the statement that came from Seti Warren, is that he acknowledged that Governor Baker has this astronomical support and this significant fundraising, when he's spent the last year plus saying that Charlie Baker is beatable. So that change and that shift, again, kind of raised my eyebrows and you know, led to the shock that I felt this morning when I saw the news come out.
All right. Well, that's Lauren Dzinski, Politico reporter and author of The Massachusetts Playbook, and WBUR reporter Steve Brown up at the State House. Thank you both. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you.
Thank you, Anthony.
All right. As promised, we're joined now by the two remaining Democratic candidates for governor. Bob Massey was the 1994 Democratic nominee for lieutenant governor. Welcome, Bob. Good to have you.
Good to be here, Anthony.
Thank you for sitting here patiently listening to us talk about you. And Jay Gonzalez worked in Governor Deval Patrick's administration as the Secretary of Administration and Finance. Jay, thanks for coming in to talk to us.
Thanks for having me.
So let me start. Seti Warren's announcement came as a pretty big surprise, as we heard this morning. Your thoughts? I'll start with you, Jay.
Well, I was surprised as well. I want to say that
SETI and Bob Massey and I have spent a lot of good quality time together over the past year on the campaign trail. We've gotten to know each other pretty well, and I like SETI a lot. I appreciate his contributions to this race and some of the issues that he focused on, like income inequality, like you mentioned. And I wish him well in whatever he decides to do next.
Yeah, so Bob, same question to you. I mean, give me your sort of quick comment about SETI Warren.
I've known SETI Warren for a long time, and he's an honorable and lovely human being, a great friend. And so my first reaction was just sorrow. He's worked very, very hard, and it's hard when you come up against that kind of wall. Then later, you start thinking about what that means for the race. But first of all, I just want to say to my friend SETI, thank you for your hard work.
Yeah. So as we heard, it's all about the money. You guys don't have a whole lot more money than the figures are comparable. I mean, we can get them precise, but aren't you both facing the same issue that drove SETI Warren out of the race?
No.
No, go ahead.
No. I mean, I disagree with the premise of much of the previous discussion, and then Steve Brown's a great reporter, but the idea that this is somehow insurmountable, I mean, then we've basically given up democracy to whoever raises the largest money. I don't think that's right. I mean, democracy is about votes. And I think right now we're seeing people rising up. They're concerned. The governor said he wants to focus on his job. He's not doing his job. I mean, the WBUR poll showed that on issue after issue, more than 50% say that he has not delivered on housing, on transportation, on the opioid crisis, on health care, on transportation, looking at it statewide. So we really see a failure there. In addition, he's not addressing the future problems, climate change, renewable energy, and all the other things that are coming at us. So, you know, Governor, if you're doing your job, please focus on the issues that people really care about. I also think that we have to, one of us is going to win this primary, and then we go on, and we're going to be joined with Elizabeth Warren, who got 600,000 more votes than Charlie, who raised $45 million last time. So we're looking at a blue wave election, and really right now it's up to the Democratic Party and unenrolled voters to determine who's going to be the nominee.
All right, Jay Gonzalez, same question to you. I mean, this issue about money, it seems, I mean, I take Bob Massey's point that it's about votes, but, you know, in defense of Steve Brown was sort of saying, this is what SETI Warren said. Warren said it was insurmountable.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this is one of those rare situations where I agree with Charlie Baker, where he said anything can happen, right? So we don't need to raise $30 million of dark money like Charlie Baker's trying to do. We just need to raise enough to be able to support a strong grassroots campaign and make sure people out there are informed about the choice. And our campaign has a lot of momentum right now. We've got a lot of support from legislators and activists all over the state. A lot of volunteers and others who are out talking to people and knocking on doors. And I feel very good about the strength of our campaign right now and the momentum we have. We've been getting stronger every day. I'm confident we're going to continue to, and we're going to be strong enough in the fall to make sure that people understand this is a choice between a governor who has made no progress on any issue that affects people's lives in any real way, no agenda to do so. He's been terrible about standing up against hate and discrimination. Versus someone who desperately wants to do so, make a difference in people's lives. And I would argue, in my case, has the leadership experience to deliver on it. And I think people are going to choose that.
All right. Well, let me sort of push back a little bit and sort of try to present what Charlie Baker might say if he were here, or some of his supporters.
So I wish
his
support,
if his support, well, we'll get him in here one of these days. But his supporters will say his popularity is the result of his record, working well across party lines, fiscal management, not raising taxes. And in this year's State of the Commonwealth address, Baker takes credit for an economy that has more people working than at any time in state history. Here's a bit of what he said. Wait a minute. Just listen.
Our economy has added 180,000 new jobs since we took office. And best of all, the number of people looking for work has dropped in every county over the past 3 years, and in most cases by more than 35%.
So, gentlemen, I mean, isn't that a winning message? I'll go to you, Bob.
No, I don't know what state he's talking about. I've been in 250 communities. I can tell you that people are hurting. They don't have access to housing. They don't have access to health care. And these jobs that he talks about, especially for young people, they're crappy jobs. They are gig economy jobs, independent contractor jobs, no benefits, no real future. That's what people are facing. Minimum wage jobs where you can't, that's not a living wage. We have a real need for economic justice, racial justice in this state. The governor, I think, because he never has had a public a town hall. He doesn't hear from people. I think he's just trapped in a little Beacon Hill cocoon, telling himself he's doing a great job. I challenge him to come out today and come out and actually listen to people, take open questions. This guy is very, very controlled, controlling his image, not getting that much done.
Jay Gonzalez, respond, though, to that record of accomplishment, I guess, on the part of the governors.
Yeah, there is no record of accomplishment. And, you know,
but what he said, I mean, talking about the economy adding 180,000 jobs since he took office.
That's what Donald Trump says. And they're both beneficiaries of the work of Barack Obama and Deval Patrick and the investments they made to help our economy grow. Look, his popularity is not a function of what he's doing. It's a function of the fact he hasn't done anything. It's easy to be popular when you don't do anything and you never take a stand and your whole approach to the job is being cautious instead of courageous. We need leadership. He is dragging us backwards. One of the other things he cited in that State of the Commonwealth speech is that we, Massachusetts, were first in the country ranked by U.S. News and World Report. Well, since then, we've dropped to eighth. And we've dropped to eighth because our transportation system is one of the worst in the country. Fiscal stability, one of the worst in the country under Charlie Baker. When I was in charge of the state budget, we had the highest bond rating in state history. Our bond ratings dropped under Charlie Baker. He set us up for a fiscal crisis. Every single issue, as Bob mentioned, that you guys recently polled and asked people, do you think Charlie Baker's doing a good job on the opioid crisis, climate change, transportation system? The majority of people in this state think he is not on every single issue.
Well, they give him high sort of marks overall, but you're right.
Do you know what it is?
The majority think he's doing an okay job or a not, sort of between okay and not so great.
Do you know what it is? Yeah. It's when people are asked, how do you feel about him? And they say, he's fine. The polling shows no one's passionate about Charlie Baker. And it is because he isn't doing anything. He hasn't done anything to offend anyone. But when you actually ask, how is your life? How's the quality of your transportation system, your education system for your kids? People are not happy about that. And as Bob mentioned, as we're going around the state, there are lots of people who are being left behind, who are facing big challenges, and we need a governor that's going to actually provide leadership and work with a sense of urgency to make a difference on these issues.
Well, you guys are making sort of friendly references to each other, but you guys are also running against each other. So what do you see as the issues that separate you two? I'll start with you, Bob.
Well, we come from different backgrounds. You know, I started many years ago as a minister in the 1980s. I then went to Harvard Business School in order to pursue economic justice. I've done grassroots leadership. I've brought together people who disagreed from business and investors and activists. I've made substantial change. I also worked on climate change for 26 years. I just won the endorsement of 350.org, which is a massive national organization today. So I think, you know, Bernie in your own backyard, that's flattering. I think I embrace that, but I also go beyond with a deep experience in the economy and social change and structural change. I think that's what people want. They, you know, I don't have Beacon Hill ties. I bring a really fresh perspective and a fresh approach, and I think people are ready to aspire to much greater things and lay out challenges that we can get done, and I believe that's something I have a record of achieving.
Jay, how would you sort of characterize your differences with Bob Massey?
Yeah, I agree. On the issues, I think there are more similarities than differences, but I think it's really about experience. And, you know, I am the only candidate that has leadership experience in state government getting big things done. This is the first time I've run for statewide office. I am not a career politician. But we both have a very progressive, ambitious agenda we want to get through. And when I worked for Governor Patrick as a Secretary of Administration and Finance, I was often his point person for getting a lot of big things through the legislature and working with the legislature and other stakeholders. So it's not going to matter what we all want to do unless we actually deliver on it. And I think I'm best positioned to do that, which is why I think progressive leaders like Senator Jamie Eldridge and Senator Cindy Friedman and a lot of others have endorsed my campaign. I think they see me as best able to deliver on the progressive agenda that we need in this state.
So you're calling yourself a progressive. Do you not buy Lauren Dzinski's idea that Bob Massey is sort of the Bernie in our own backyard and you're the centrist here?
I didn't want to call Lauren out, but I've got a very progressive agenda. It's why I'm getting support not only from some who are more moderate in the Democratic Party, but many who are very progressive, like Senator Jamie Eldridge, who I think all would agree is probably the most progressive senator. I'm offering an ambitious progressive agenda, the leadership experience to deliver on it, and I think that's what we need right now in this state.
All right. Let me come back to the sort of another challenge, and you guys have made reference a couple of times to the WBUR poll, and there was a big challenge in that poll for both of you, and that's around name recognition. I mean, in that poll from March, more than 60% of the voters we talked to had never heard of either of you. Bob Massey, how do you change that?
Well, first of all, we face a political process within the Democratic Party that doesn't really work because it keeps us focused running around to town committees, which, of course, I respect them. It forces us to do chase delegates, do all that stuff. So we are competing primarily within that structure, a structure that I want to change because I think the party needs to open up. Also, I'd like you to poll tomorrow and see what happens after this show and the newspaper and a lot of other things. I've done a lot of interviews today. So this is just going to go up. And as it goes up, people will understand the what we're saying as Democrats. I'd like to say, for me, a progressive is someone who really pursues economic justice and is willing to take on corporate power. And that's something I don't think Jay is fully has the experience in doing. But that being said, I think both of our names are going to be more recognized in the weeks ahead. And as we go all the way through the spring and all the way through the summer, I think we're going to see that rise and rise and rise.
Jay, we have less than 30 seconds left. I'll give you the last word here.
So there's a lot of enthusiasm and excitement out there for our campaign. A lot of people who've gotten engaged who believe that we should expect more from our governor than just someone who's all about the status quo, accepts the world the way it exists, and trying to manage it better. We need a governor who's going to aim higher and actually work to make a difference in people's lives. And I believe as this campaign goes on and we get more name recognition and more people understand that choice, we're going to end up taking back the governor's office and actually delivering on that.
All right, gentlemen. Well, that's Jay Gonzalez and Bob Massey, the Democratic candidates for governor. And we'll talk to both of them again next month in our gubernatorial primary debate on May 17th. Gentlemen, thank you for coming in today. We're very grateful.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
If you're buying a house, a home inspection can flag major problems. If you're buying a car, there's a reporting system that can tell you about a vehicle's accident history. But what about if you're shopping for a college education? Every year, students and families shell out tens of thousands of dollars on tuition. How can they tell whether a school is financially stable or if it's about to close? As in the case of two local schools, Wheelock and Mount Ida Colleges, shutting down after this semester. WBUR Edify reporter Carrie Young has this report.
Mount Ida students and parents say they're still reeling from the news that the college won't reopen in the fall.
We certainly were not prepared for the fact that the college itself was in such dire debt.
I just don't get how it got this bad.
I never received any information that they were in such bad financial distress.
That was parent Laurel Collins, student Lacey Perry, and parent Laurie Jurassic, who all say they were blindsided when they heard about the planned shutdown earlier this month, which got me wondering, could anyone have seen this coming?
I think that's a tricky question.
That's Dr. Talani Britton. She teaches higher education economics at Harvard's Graduate School of Education. She says the answer to my question is both a yes and no. Britton explains it's a yes because all for-profit and non-profit private schools are issued what's known as a financial responsibility composite score by the U.S. Department of Education every year.
So essentially, it really looks at the financial health of the institutions. It's a single number as opposed to, a financial report that you then have to decode or decipher.
They're publicly posted, and the scores are based on three main factors.
So first is sort of what's called the primary reserve. Essentially, what it does is says, can this institution cover its existing expenses? The second component is the equity component,
which basically measures a school's capacity to pay unexpected expenses or even make campus improvements. And the third factor looks at whether the school is operating within its means. And all of that boils down to one number, or score, from -1 to +3.
If you are over 1.5, it means you're financially responsible, you're in the clear.
Scores lower than 1.5 trigger government oversight measures. Mount Ida has been consistently scoring a 1.8, so outside of the official danger zone, despite the school's financial problems.
This score actually doesn't have great predictive power.
Britton adds that on the other side, only 1 in 5 schools that got failing scores in 2011 actually closed by 2017. So why is this tool missing the mark? To find out, I called up Melissa Emery Aris. She investigated this very question for the U.S. Government Accountability Office last year.
Some of the particular issues that we found with it were things like it was no longer reflecting current accounting practices.
It's outdated.
And also, quite frankly, that it's vulnerable to manipulation. There were loopholes. For example, some of them would inflate their scores by taking out large loans and then pay back those loans.
The now defunct Corinthian Colleges was one of the biggest users of this tactic.
We recommended that the Department of Education update this formula.
I reached out to the Department of Education for its response. While no one was available for an interview, the department sent its official response letter to the Government Accountability Office, which said the report didn't show how new accounting standards have made the scores any less reliable, adding the department is planning to establish a committee to consider the possibility. So, what can students and families do to avoid getting stuck in a situation like what many are going through at Mount Ida College? Emery Aris actually recommends they still check out the financial responsibility scores.
Even though this is not the most accurate tool, it is still a useful indicator and can be helpful to students and their families.
So while the scores may not be the most accurate, for right now, they're the best we've got, unless you want to brush up on your corporate accounting skills.
That's WBUR Edify reporter Carrie Young with that report. Stay with us. Coming up, former White House photographer Pete Souza on 8 years of photographing President Obama and witnessing history. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.